The AC Podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada and is supported by the generous donations of our listeners. If you would like to partner with us in this ministry, please go to apologeticscanada.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Apologetics Canada podcast. This is Steve Kim.
Andy Steiger.
Terry Crosby.
The three are back together.
It is so good to be back with you guys.
Yeah.
Seems like a long time.
It's been a while.
Since I've looked into your deep, dark eyes.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Good to see you too, Terry.
There's some serious bromance going on there, Terry. We're back. I'm still sort of getting over jet lag a little bit. The first night I crushed it, went to bed at like 10, woke up at 6. It was great. And then The next night, eyes wide open. It's like, it's 5 a.m. Why am I not sleeping?
Wow.
And then last night I was like, I was out at 9, woke up at 6. I'm just like, this feels great.
Yeah, so tonight could be up in the air?
Yeah.
Either way.
So if the pattern follows, I could be up at like 5 a.m. again. But we'll see. Hopefully that won't happen.
Brutal. When I got back from Korea, I had to then jump in a car and my family and I drove down to Medford, Oregon. Which was like a 10-hour drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, after just getting back. So that was brutal.
Yeah, I hope you did.
I was hating life for a while there. But it was a great wedding. Yeah, and the jet lag really didn't hit me, but I have like superhuman powers when it comes to sleeping on planes. I just sleep like the whole time. It's brutal.
I'm jealous because I just cannot sleep.
See, I wish I could like watch some movies and stuff like that, but oh man, it's just sleepy time.
I went through a lot of movies.
I slept one time.
Oh, did you?
I slept from one time from takeoff from Abbotsford. No, it was Vancouver Airport into Vegas Airport without waking up.
Wow.
I was so exhausted from whatever working with it all that week.
Yeah.
I woke up and I looked around and we were coming up to the gate in Vegas.
Well, even on this flight, I was asleep before we took off. Well, it's kind of creepy when you just wake up and you're 30,000 feet in the air. Yeah, like, how did we get here?
Exactly.
Speaking of, you know, sleeping or watching movies on the plane, when I got to Korea after our schedule with filming was done, I went down to the city of Daegu where I was born and raised to see my grandma. So I had to take this bullet train called KTX. Except on the way into Seoul, I watched a movie called Train to Busan.
It's a zombie movie.
It's a zombie movie, and it all happens on KTX. And and the main characters start dying off right at the station where I was supposed to get off to go see grandma. So I'm like, that was not a good idea. I was a little freaked.
That's great.
Oh, by the way, before we get into things, I think it might be just helpful for some people to know what we were doing because there was a little bit of confusion. I think some people thought that we flew to Korea to interview Pastor Lee.
No, that was a small part of it. Yeah. Andy and I, along with two people from Power to Change, Jake and Richard, we went to Seoul, South Korea to film episode 3 of The Human Project.
Yeah, the question we were looking at was, what leads to human flourishing?
Right. So we hired two actors through Campus Crusade for Christ there and a bunch of extras. And we filmed in a coffee shop and in there.
We filmed a short story and the short story takes place at night. Mm-hmm. So most of our filming took place between 7 p.m. and 1 a.m. And it was just a madhouse schedule. No word of a lie. We worked from 7 a.m. in the morning until 1 a.m. Mm-hmm. 3 days in a row.
Right. And part of that schedule included our interview with Pastor Lee. Because The Human Project deals with the theme of dehumanization, we thought it was very appropriate to interview a man who works in the ministry of humanizing the babies and the mothers.
So we did that in between shooting. You also see a video that we posted online, an interview we did with my iPhone just in between scenes where we interviewed the two main actors and just asked them what's it like to live beside North Korea. So you can see that. We can throw that up on the show notes. And yeah, and then in the midst of that, did a whole bunch of other filming. So besides the 3 days of intensive filming, we had a whole bunch more work that we did as well. So it was busy.
And we have some good stories to tell you guys. So just come up to us and ask us. And I'm sure as the human project gets completed and you know, we get to showcase it, we'll be able to start telling you some of the stories. One involving emergency bells. You'll hear all about it another time. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys went over there right when all this crisis is happening with North Korea and South Korea.
Yeah.
What was the feeling there?
Well, it was funny because a lot of people were thinking, you guys are insane to go to South Korea with all that's going on. I actually heard from a number of people who thought that. Mm-hmm. But over there, we saw it on the news quite regularly.
Yeah.
You know, that's for sure. And definitely it's on the minds of people, but they're just so used to hearing threats from North Korea.
Yeah.
They don't take it too seriously.
Yeah, it doesn't really faze them. And it's a big case of North Korea crying wolf one too many times, and now there's hardly anything that they can do that'll actually faze people. And if you look at Seoul's like from the edge of the city, it's only half an hour's drive to DMZ, right?
Yeah.
And so,
the other thing too that's important to note, and Steve was the one to point this out to me, is that you'll know that it's going to get dangerous in that area when the United States starts removing their people from South Korea and when there's a travel advisory. You know, because that, interestingly enough, just to get medical insurance to go, that you couldn't if there is a travel advisory. So we were able to get medical insurance and everything.
Yeah, no problem. And we checked the Government of Canada website before we went, and there were no advisories out. And so obviously they thought it was safe enough, you know, just use.
So those are your two big ones that you know an attack is coming.
Yeah.
Is if they remove their people and a travel advisory goes up.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So, yeah, just keep your eyes on the Human Project website, thehumanproject.ca. You'll be seeing some updates on there.
Yeah, we'll be posting that interview soon.
All right. Speaking of Korea, one of the things about Korea is that they're facing one of the lowest birth rates in the world right now. They kind of fight for that first place along with Singapore and Japan and
Germany.
And Germany. And just a little while ago on Indy100.com, there was this article that was posted. In fact, as the date of this recording, this was posted 5 days ago, so it's pretty fresh. The title of the article is "The Worst Decision You Can Ever Make Is to Have a Child, According to Science." Now, let me pause there right away. Every time I see a popular article like this and I hear "according to science," I'm just like, you just lost all credibility. You know what I mean? Like, I just can't trust when people say "according to science." I'm like, okay, until you actually start mentioning some real names.
Well, interestingly enough, Steve, according to science, I am the sexiest man on the planet. Wow. It's proven, Terry.
Where's the article?
Wow. I'll show you the research.
Okay. Yeah.
But according to this article, science tells you, I think there's a lot of truth to what they're saying. Basically, the article is saying it's going to cost you your sleep, your money, and
intimacy
between the spouses, right? And so this is a pretty, actually a terrible decision to
true,
make.
True, right?
Yeah. Right.
All of us have kids here.
Oh, I know. When I first heard that, I'm like, what are they telling me I don't already know?
Exactly.
Yeah. Of course, having children is one of the worst things you can do to your, you know, if you want to lose money, lose sleep, you know, and challenge your relationship. That's a no-brainer. I mean, we needed a scientific study to tell us that.
So this article says, I'll just read this section really quickly. Here are some key stats. For starters, marriages have been shown to struggle significantly after the birth of a child.
Mm-hmm.
Bustle reports that 70% of couples experience slumps in their relationship within the first 3 years of a child's birth. I can see that.
Check.
This can be attributed to a variety of things, including less intimacy, less money, differences in opinion on how to raise the child, and an overall lack of time spent together.
Check.
Ellen Walker, PhD, told Psychology Today marital satisfaction rates actually plummet after the birth of the first child. So if a couple has the idea that a baby will bring them closer, think again. Sleep is also something that parents can kiss goodbye to. In the first 2 years of a baby's life, a parent will lose 6 months of sleep. Whoa.
That was an interesting tidbit there.
Amounting to only 2.5 hours of sleep a night on average. There is also a
huge... That seems a little over the top to me. When I read that, I was like,
I was wondering the same thing.
I think that's a little extreme.
Maybe it's different for the mother. Who knows, right? But even then, I'm like, I'm sure... My wife, Sharina got more sleep than that.
Yeah.
Maybe after the first little while, right? There is also a huge financial deficiency that is associated with children. NBC News have reported that in America, having a kid can cost as much as $13,000 a year, which by the time they reach 17 will mean parents have forked out a total of $233,000. Furthermore, mothers make roughly 3% less money than those that don't have children. Finally, there is the threat of overpopulation. Scientists predict that the world's population will exceed 10.5 billion by 2050. I just found that at the end, this is what really irked me. Okay, at the end, the article says, of course, this isn't to say don't have kids at all, but it is an example of just how challenging this responsibility can be. Either they just really haven't thought through this, or this is really dishonest, because if you look at the title... Again, if you remember the title of the article, it says, the worst decision you can ever make is to have a child, according to science.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they're saying at the end, well, and we're not saying don't have kids at all.
Yeah, I know. I first heard about this. By the way, this article, from what I understand, was made popular by a YouTuber, apparently two people that have this YouTube show.
Greg and Mitch, this article actually cites them.
Yeah.
Because they do a science show sort of thing. And so
exactly.
That's the authority?
That's the under... Because when I first heard about this, I was actually... This was like a month ago. I was driving in and I heard the radio talking about it.
Right.
This is the research was done in Germany, which I find is kind of funny, in that Germany has one of the lowest birth rates in the world. Mm-hmm. And so really, and if anything, what they were doing was just further confirming, you know, what people are already doing, not having kids in Germany. But when I heard this, like many of you, I just thought this is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I can think of many things that are difficult for you, but that doesn't mean that they're not good for you.
Right. You could do a whole reductio ad absurdum, right?
Oh, like exercise comes to mind immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, exercise sucks, and I can tell you a whole lot of terrible things about exercise. And in fact, Terry, many of you don't know this, but that? Terry is a Spartan.
I am.
You can tell us about it. You competed in the...
Yeah, I finished my third race in the Spartan trifecta. So there was a sprint, a super, and a beast. And I did the beast this last weekend. And it turned out to be about 26K, 31 obstacles. And the guy at the start line who was getting us, you know, pumped up, he was saying, you guys will run 10,000 feet of elevation climb today.
Wow.
And I kind of looked at him and I was like, a what?
I said, pardon me.
Exactly. And he looked right back at me and he's like, yeah. And I'm like, oh man, this is
gonna be. What have I gotten myself into?
Yeah. That? And then the top of the mountain was at 7,000 feet. So you're struggling with, you know, the air up there and stuff like that. But I tell you, I do it again. It's fun. It keeps me in shape.
But I mean, exercise is like that, right?
It's a struggle. You have to get out there every day. You have to train. You have to go to the gym. Yeah, for sure.
Or even think about climbing a mountain. Climbing a mountain sucks. It's hard work, you know, but there's the view at the top. Mm-hmm. This is one of the things about this article. I think what a narcissistic culture to write an article like this, right? Because it talk about being self-consumed, added to the fact to having a very limited view of the future, of the outcome, right? Like we're all in agreement that having babies is tough. Having kids is tough. But here I am, I got a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old, and I'm telling you right now that this article has it absolutely backwards. Anybody who's got kids would tell you, at least that I've talked to, having kids is the best decision I've ever made, not the worst. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there were a number of years that were hard, where my kids pooped their pants, and wet the bed, and lots of other horrible things, and got sick, and you name it, and cost me lots of money and sleep and everything else. But there's lots of things that are good for you that are challenges.
And I'm also thinking, if I hadn't had our two kids, I don't think I would be the same person I am today than I was some 4 years ago when we first had. I mean, talk about character formation, hey?
Absolutely.
Because if you're a parent, they're going to test your limits, because that's what children do. And your job is to civilize them. And so it actually forces you to nurture wisdom, patience, and all of these really good character traits in you. Before you do that in your children, you are forced to do that in yourself first. And that's not something that money, sleep, or intimacy can buy.
Yep. And by the way, this is a very Christian thing. This idea that you're not self-consumed, that you're taking your view off of yourself and you're looking to somebody else and going, you know what? Having kids isn't all about me. And thinking about thinking about my children and about their lives. Also, though, we could take a more narcissistic view, because this is something I think the article does not bring up that we know is way worse for you, and that's loneliness. And research has shown, and we've talked about this a lot on the show, that it was just actually released just this last month, that loneliness is a public health crisis. It's one of the worst possible things for you. And I'm telling you right now, if you don't have kids, you are darn near guaranteed a life of loneliness as you age. Particularly, I think about those people who die alone. So you could make the argument even simply from that having kids is good, if not for the very fact of just family and right. and being with people.
Now, I can hear some critics in my head or whatever saying, well, what about all those families where the kids don't ever want to see their parents again, things like the yada, yada, yada. I'm like, okay, well, yeah, sure. That happens sometimes, right? But that you can't extrapolate from that to say having kids is the worst decision you can have, period, right? Like, I mean, having kids is a good thing. Sometimes aberrations happen because relationships fall apart. But that's not the ideal. That's not the best picture of having kids.
And that also relates to this idea that having kids is a strain on your marriage. That's assuming that other things aren't going to be a strain on your marriage. I mean, there are more things that are a strain on your marriage than just having kids.
Exactly.
Your job can be a strain on your marriage, lack of money, education. I mean, there's a whole list of things. So are we going to say then that those things aren't good for you, or the worst thing ever because they're going to be a strain? No, there's lots of things that are going to be a strain on your marriage. But I can tell you this, I love my wife more now than I did when we first got married, that our relationship has grown. That's a choice. That's a decision that I'm going to work through the hardships, and I'm going to continue to build this marriage because I value it. And what you have often, though, is you've got people who end up giving up on that relationship, both parties, and then it falls apart from there.
There's an idea of this, of a happy life within our culture.
Right.
Kids are not in that happy life scenario, right?
No.
Not at all. I mean, we work other things like job, getting to the top of the ladder kind of thing. And that's hard work, but we'll put it into that rather than
because it's
kids.
All about me.
Because it's about me, right?
Right.
It's that individualism, and we're happy to do what makes us happy, right? And kids is not part of that.
And I'm also curious about you, Terry, because you've had a pretty challenging family life.
Yeah.
Right? Just with you and Jen and your kids. So how has that impacted you?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I mentioned it a couple podcasts ago about patience in myself. So that was character forming for myself, right? I mean, we get the kids. There's a lot of issues, a lot of struggles. I mean, I was not a patient person to begin with. You could ask my wife. But as we move into this family life, you have to put yourself back and think about somebody else, right? and adjust your life and adjust who you are. I mean, it is Christ forming. It really is.
Oh, absolutely.
As we go through this, you know, and as Christians, I mean, we need to embrace that. I mean, in the sense that we want to be more like Christ and we can see him working through the kids to us, you know. So patience for myself was was an issue.
So would it be fair to say then you've gained a lot from having these children in your life?
Yeah, for sure.
Right?
Like for
sure. Stuff that you probably couldn't buy with money.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I mean, I missed that whole 3.5 years of a child's life because the youngest child that came into our home was 3.5. So that those sleepless nights and stuff like that, yeah. and those terrible twos, we didn't experience that, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, I look back and I like, okay, I would have liked to, honestly, because, you know, there would have been a little bit more understanding in that area, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. So 3.5 years old, she was the youngest and came in. But even from that, I mean, with the 5 kids, it was character forming, and it was a lot to deal with.
You know, I think a lot of people don't appreciate that in the Christian worldview, and you brought this up, Terry, that our desire is to be Christ-like, that we want to grow in holiness. And the idea there being, particularly in Christianity, that we have these moral laws, or that we could call you know, railings or boundaries that help us to stay on the right path. And the idea in Christianity isn't that God's trying to keep you from something good. God's trying to keep you in something that's good. You know, I think a lot of people have this idea that there's the good is out there and God's trying to keep me away from it. But actually these railings or these boundaries, these moral laws are actually to keep you from the bad that's out there. And one of those is this narcissism, this focus on oneself. So God's moral law then is helping us to stay on a path that's going to be healthy and most productive for us in our lives. And Christ talks about, we hear about this in the Bible, of taking up your cross and following after Jesus, right? What does that look like? Well, notice that Jesus took his focus off of himself, right? It wasn't about what's going to make for the best life for God. Mm-hmm. It was God, and actually this is a different way of even putting it, because ultimately taking your focus off of yourself and putting it onto other people and sacrificing for people actually does in fact lead to the best life for you. Mm-hmm. And is for your good.
And it's not particular to the kids. It starts at marriage.
Absolutely.
Right? You get two together and you have to adjust.
Mm-hmm. It's right? Not all about you anymore.
Marriage is Christ forming.
Yeah, absolutely. Any time that you take your focus off yourself and you put it onto God, other people, that is a Christ-forming moment. That you are beginning to grow in your relationship with God. You're growing in holiness. By the way, I think this is an interesting point. In the Bible, Paul, in particular, in Colossians, it's chapter 1, verse 28, I believe. The Apostle Paul talks about how we are being made perfect in Christ, that we are to be perfect in Christ. And the idea there, that this Jewish Hebrew idea of perfection, is to fulfill the purpose that you were. When something fulfills the purpose it was made for, that's perfection. And this idea then that a human being was created to be in relationship with God, in relationship with other people, perfection, holiness comes then when we stop being consumed with ourselves, which, by the way, we've all been around those kind of people. They are not pleasant people, mm-hmm. right? What's the kind of person you want to be around? Well, it's somebody that's actually focused on not themselves, right? That's focused on other people, that's focused on God. Those are the pleasant people you want to be with.
It's interesting because just the other day, I made a comment on a friend's Facebook post. And it was interesting because somebody, a mutual friend or something like that, started commenting, like replying to my comment. He wasn't so much talking to me, he was talking at me. And he was giving me all of these things, all of his ideas that I didn't even ask for. And he started just throwing them at me. just imagine that, because we've all known people, but they're so consumed with themselves that they're not talking to you, they're talking at you. And you know how horrible it is to be on the receiving end of this thing. And this is not the kind of person that you want to be with, right? So even in just casual conversations, this sort of thing comes out. You know, when you have somebody who's really interested in you, and I got to give a shout out to Thalia at this church where we work. She's one of the pastors here, care pastors, and she's a great conversationalist in the sense that she takes genuine interest in your life and she asks questions about you. I think many of us can resonate with that. When people take interest in you rather than themselves and actually want to learn more about you, see how your day is going and things like that, these are the kinds of people that you want to be with. Just even from our conversations, we can see that.
Can I just change the tone just a little bit and address another issue that kind of popped out in one of the other articles? So we're talking about parents that have kids. What about parents that don't have kids? There's a verse that came up in here. It said, you know, the Bible tells us to be fruitful and increase in number. And then a verse in Psalm 127:3 says, children are a heritage from God, offspring a reward from him. That kind of like hit me, a reward from him. I think most people have got it now that my wife and I have not been able to have kids, right? That kind of seems harsh, like in the sense that it is a reward, but we have not been able to have it, kids.
I think it's an important thing to bring up, Terry, and that is that the Bible makes it clear, and we could point to many places, that being fruitful and multiplying, we call it a cultural mandate, bringing forth children, bringing forth society, bringing forth culture is a good thing, right? And that this is something that we should seek out. However, we do live in a broken world, a world in which, you know, Terry, as you and your wife have experienced, have trouble having children, right? But I think we have to be careful, though. Listen, I'm going to say some things I think are a little controversial. Let's just have at it.
Put it out there, man.
I respect that some people have a difficult time having children, and my sympathy definitely goes out to them. But I don't think that that negates the fact that having kids is a good thing and something that we should pursue and that we should celebrate. And I know I've had friends that couldn't have kids, and it was hard for them every time they heard of another friend having a child.
Oh, for sure.
Right?
I can relate.
You know what I'm talking about.
You betcha.
It's like, it's a knife to the heart, right?
Yep.
But at the same time, wouldn't you say, though, that that's very narcissistic, right?
Yeah.
Because, again, you've become very focused with yourself, and it's hard then to celebrate with somebody else that's going through something joyous, right? Yeah. Because I'm so focused on the fact that I can't have kids, that I can't see that having kids is a good thing, and I should be rejoicing with my friends who are having children. That's one piece. I think the other thing is, you know, you and your wife adopted. I mean, that's an option, right? There's a lot of kids out there that we just came from South Korea where there are kids that are being adopted, 20 a month, not adopted, that are being abandoned to the tune of 20 a month, and they need to be adopted, right? I mean, there are options out there.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to kind of say the same thing. As hard as it has been, you know, you see these people having 2, 3, 4, 5 kids, you know, and you can't have any. Right? That's pretty harsh. That's hard. Very, very hard. To have a kid that might look like you. You kind of see kids out there that might look like you. You kind of, what could have happened kind of thing, right? Yeah. But the other thing, too, is adoption.
Yeah.
And there's opportunities for couples that cannot conceive to have children, you know, and experience that, not right from the birth, you know, which is pretty fantastic, I imagine. But, you know, later on, you can be an impact to other kids, to other somebody else's kids.
See, when we were in Korea, there were many things that I observed. One of those things is that this is a culture where bloodline is really important, right? Because of the, you know, Confucianistic undertone for the whole civilization there. And so bloodline is really important, and adoption has traditionally been kind of shunned a bit. It was frowned upon because it's not your blood. Right, that you're raising, and any sort of descendants that you get through that child is really it's not your blood. And so in that context, Christianity has been very countercultural, because the Bible uses the image of adoption as God adopts us as sons and daughters into his household. And Christ is the firstborn, right? Yep. And we are co-inheritors of Christ. And if you look at, if you read that language, like in the book of Ephesians, for example, we are co-inheritors of the kingdom. In a sense, I got to really emphasize this, in a sense, we're equals with Christ, right? And that just blows my mind. How could that be? Mm-hmm. And so as far as God is concerned, sure, you know, Christ is king. You know, he is, everything will be subjected to him. With that said, we're also inheritors of the same kingdom that Jesus Christ has inherited from the Father. And I'm just like,
mind blown.
And so because of that, when I think of adoption, I think of it very differently. I don't think of it as anything less than having children of your own, as in from your body, right? Adoption, very biblical image.
Absolutely. I was studying this recently, a 12th century theologian by the name of Richard of St. Victor makes an argument that God needs to be triune if God is a God of love. And the argument that he makes is that, okay, if God's just one person, you know, for all eternity, there would be nothing to love, right? So that's problematic. But then he makes the argument that, well, if God's only two persons, well, then that's a... that is a, you know, an infatuation sort of love where the two are so focused on each other that they don't have they don't consider anyone else. And we've all experienced somebody, you know, with that level, a couple with that level of infatuation. But then he's saying, but God is a God of love. It's a mutual love that is giving or bringing forth relationship and love. And that happens when there's three. This is the idea of a family. If you think about it, in a relationship, in a family, there is the desire for growth. In that, you know, like for example, if I were to, in a healthy family, if I were to tell my kids, hey, we're gonna have another kid, there's an excitement to that, right? That there's more to love. And what we see in God's nature is that this love in God is bringing forth more love. And in that way, God has created us and has desired to be in relationship with us and to share in this love. And we've been made in that image. And so in us, there should be this desire, shouldn't there, to take our focus off of ourselves and in a relationship with our spouse to see that our love for one another is bringing forth more love into that relationship.
Well, that's it for us today. Thank you for joining us, listeners. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada, and we'll come back next week with more to think about.